Good morning. Welcome to this edition of Rich Urban Show. We're very happy to continue and on this discussion about strengthening families and communities. We have Richie Robb on today. You may remember he was running for attorney general. And we're very happy to talk about this very important topic of strengthening families and communities. So if it's okay with you, Mr. Robb, I'll just share a few slides and then we'll hear your ideas and anything you want to share and continue the discussion.
Works for me, yes, sir.
Okay, so I'm going to share the screen here. Okay, this is a few thoughts and I have about it. I want to make a premise and share a couple slides about the issue of, strengthening families. So the premise generally is to break the generational cycle of outside of wedlock birth, we need a revolution of absence-centered education. Parents should present the expectation of sexual abstinence before marriage to their children. Regardless of whether or not they abstain themselves, they should think about what's best for their children's future and speak honestly about their own situation. School and community-based programs such as Urban Life Training can back up parents in making this revolution. In one generation, this can break the cycle of outside of wedlock births and all the related personal and societal consequence. Okay, let's see. So here in West Virginia, right now 47%, here may I make this one, of children are born outside of marriage. So we see this steady rise over time from 5 to 10% up until around 1975, and then really increasing very rapidly. So now 47% of children in West Virginia are born outside of marriage. Teaching sexual abstinence before marriage is integrally related to creating a safe and healthy environment for our children. So our mission at Urban Life Training is Urban Life Training raises youth leaders to develop good character and to model and teach about the benefits of sexual abstinence in preparation for marriage and successful family formation. We provide directive abstinence-centered health education through our community network of trained parents and community leaders. Urban Life Training chapters carry out the Urban Life Training mission in their local areas. So this is a quote. This is from the family rooted in absolute sexual ethics, which is a model for God's absoluteness, peace, and ideal, and the global kingdom. That's from Reverend Sun Myung-moon. Respected leaders from around the world, what do you think God's ultimate purpose for creating human beings is? God's purpose, rather, of creating human beings? It is to experience joy through relating with ideal families filled with true love. What does an ideal family look like? When God first created human beings, he made Adam representing all men and Eve representing all women with the intention that they become owners of true love. Then what was the quickest way for them to cultivate a character of true love? Simply put, it was to secure a parent-child relationship with God, whereby they could live in attendance of God as their father and form a model family embodying God's ideal of peace. They were to have followed the path of living as one family with God, experiencing joy eternally. God created Adam and Eve and installed them as the first ancestors of humankind to form the family, the model family, and establish the ideal of peace. He committed himself completely to raising them as his son and daughter, who were to be encapsulations of the entire cosmos, mediators between the spiritual and physical worlds, and lords of creation, and who would be joined with him through true love, true life, and true lineage. Ladies and gentlemen, it was necessary for Adam and Eve to establish a model ideal family of peace. God, the absolute being, created human beings as his children in order to instill in them absolute values on the basis of absolute standard. Thus, human beings must follow the way of that absolute standard in keeping with the demands of the heavenly path. This means we must follow our destined life course in order to attend God, the absolute being, as our parent. In other words, for people to perfect themselves in resemblance of God and obtain the stature of people of character, who can be called sons and daughters of the Absolute Being, they must follow the path based on the absolute standard of God has determined. The essence of this path is the standard of absolute sexual purity. The first stage is maintain absolute sexual purity prior to getting married. After we are born, we go through a process of growth. We pass through infancy and childhood in a very safe and secure environment, embraced in our parents' love and protection. We then enter a time of adolescence, which signals the start of a new and dynamic life as we forge relationships on a totally new level with those around us, as well as with all things of creation. This is the moment when we begin to travel the path to become an absolute human being, internally through the perfection of our character and externally by reaching adulthood. Yet at this time, there is an absolute requirement that people must fulfill, no matter who they are. That is the requirement of maintaining their purity, which is a model of absolute sexual morality for human beings. God gave it to his children as their destined responsibility and duty to be carried out in order to fulfill the ideal of creation. This heavenly path is thus the way toward perfecting the model of absoluteness and conjugal love. So this is what I call the success formula. To avoid poverty, graduate from high school, get a full-time job, wait until 21 and married before having children. So if you follow these items, these points, then there's a 2% chance that you'll live in poverty. But if you don't follow any of these, there's a 74% chance that in the future you'll live in poverty. So that's very striking. And it's a simple formula, but one that I think we should really emphasize. And especially lacking is the third one. Wait until 21 and marry before having children. We're not emphasizing that. When I say we, I mean overall. So I see a two-tiered solution to this family breakdown problem. One, teach sexual abstinence before marriage and fidelity within marriage to our children. Regardless of our own situation, we should think about what's best for our children, and we could teach them that. Two, create a movement of marriage that is God-centered. Union Station Without Love is a matching site for singles who practice sexual abstinence before marriage or who have returned to sexual abstinence before marriage can find a marriage partner. That's a project of Urban Life Training, which it says here. Okay. This is a site, unionstation.love. We just completed it. We have a very nice marriage preparation course. We call it the Blessing of Marriage Preparation Course. All the members take it. So a number of people are taking it now, and then they'll be able to make like a profile. So this is centered on marriage. And so individuals 21 or older are welcome to join, but also we encourage parents to help their adult children. Just because your child is 18, 19, 20, whatever, doesn't mean that their responsibility is completely ended. I believe, and we've also practiced that like with their own daughters married now, that the parents should help their children. And so you can work with your child on this site, or, you know, just join the site yourself if you're single. And married couples also have that very nice marriage education class. So that's really good for married couples, too, to refresh and, you know, strengthen their marriage. I just wanted to share those few thoughts. So, yeah, I just love to get your thoughts. I mean, any thoughts you have in response to that. But in general, like this whole topic of strengthening families, of, you know, having more married children. First of all, your reaction to that in general, the importance of that, and then any thoughts on how to accomplish that. And specifically also, if you have any response to what I was sharing, or any, if you have something prepared that you want to share, please feel free to share it now.
Okay, well, thank you. When you contacted me a few days ago to appear on the show, appreciate your doing so. I gave the matter a lot of thought, discussed it very briefly with my spouse, and she's here, and maybe she'll join in if it's okay.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I should have had my better half.
Here she comes. Here comes my bride of more years than I'm going to say, but we certainly met the criteria of being over 21 and or whatever all those things were. And I'm not sure how much.
Graduated from high school. I'm probably you did that one.
Well, I'm a mess, so I don't know if I really want to.
Yeah, well, you can get you in there. Well, but anyhow, I think it is certainly an ideal situation, and one that was historically accurate. Your statistics show basically every other child now being born in West Virginia is born to parents who aren't married. And so if you're tackling every other birth, the urban initiative has a formidable challenge ahead. I think that the positives are good, and I would think that in general is a good step. Perhaps not always. We have such things as divorce, spousal abuse. The list goes on. I'm not sure how to do more except to say that that reality, for better or for worse, is a challenge that you're facing, and it appears from your statistics that the challenge overall may be for worse, but there's a certain realism that we have to recognize that every other person right now coming into this world is not born to being born to a married couple.
But I do have one comment about
absolutely.
That. Well, go ahead. Yeah, Mrs. Robb.
One thing I wanted to say is that there are things I wish we could do for child care, because I know of people. I'm a retired teacher, and I taught all this year. There are people who they don't get married because the cost of child care. And as a single mother, they get help or a lesser rate, and they are very much looking forward to the time when the children are out of child care and they can afford to get married and take care of, you know, be more like what the old time families, I would say, used to be. I think there's a reality now that in most households, women work, and that didn't used to be the case. So I wish that we could address some of those practical things that would make it easier.
Yeah. I guess our approach is more, those are necessary things. I mean, if, the parents can't make ends meet, like my mom can't stay home or whatever, or doesn't want to, then, and needs childcare, that's right. It is expensive. What I guess the point I was making is like a common reaction might be like what you're saying, a lot of children, almost half are born outside of marriage. But my point about it is like, and I actually, till 8 years ago, I was in D.C. I moved out here to Shenandoah, on the very, very far eastern part of West Virginia in Harpers Ferry. So working in D.C. and in the, city, it's a lot of the children, as you well imagine, most, 75% probably plus, didn't come from, two-parent homes. So what I'm getting at is like they hadn't heard about this option. They weren't thinking about it. They didn't know. Some of the children don't know, or maybe quite a few, any couples who are married or their own parents, aren't married. So I don't think that excludes teaching this. And I think from the parental viewpoint, I've also run into some of the parents or talked to them, over the years, who were like in our program. Some listened, some didn't, but they, maybe said, "Oh, Mr. Urban, I wish I would have paid attention. I was, 16, 17. Some are married. I've been to some weddings, and that's real good. So the point being that even those parents, even if they didn't follow that formula, they still realize it's a good one. And so the point I'm making is not to like say, oh no, you're so terrible, you didn't follow the formula, but more like, how can you, you know, benefit the next generation instead of just passing down like, oh, mom wasn't married, I'm not gonna be married, you know, mom and hopefully dad, you know, can guide them to, oh, you know, hey, it's true, you know, I wasn't married, but hey, it's so much better. I really, you know, should have been, and these are the reasons and things like that. What do you think about that idea? You know, in other words, breaking the cycle. Well, we're not like denying, you know, that that's reality. What do you think?
Well, that would be, you know, that would be a positive thing to do. I don't see, I think it's a positive thing to do. I think it's an attempt to deal with the reality that's out there. Again, the statistic is if those, and I have no reason to doubt it, every other child is born outside of a marriage.
Yes, that is true. And even nationwide is 40%, but yeah, almost half here in West Virginia.
And your statistics are those statistics have the family being a fundamental part of our, you know, part of human existence. This and support the statistics as they are, if improved upon, would make for a better society. I do not challenge that. I think efforts like what you're trying to do are admirable and certainly need to be in place and more effort and assets attached to that. But it's as you probably know, it's a long road ahead.
Well, I think one aspect of it is, and we do have a lot of experience with this, is so we have like a chapter model. People can teach these materials, and we have all the materials on our website. People can join for a small fee and use those materials in their family or at a local, you know, if they so desire, could form a chapter and bring it to local schools, you know, talk to the principal of the school. And if the principal is open to it, it would be like a extra curriculum for them. We've worked with, of course, health teachers, because that makes sense. But also sometimes the principal will ask us to work with just a teacher they think is interested in this. So I remember the very first teacher I worked with was earth science teacher. And then the physics teacher heard about it. And he said, hey, I like that for my. So it's not always necessarily a health or whatever teacher. And just, you know, students benefit. And then we have the second part is forming clubs. So we have these clubs, like STAR leadership clubs, where the students are interested, which usually we find out by taking a survey after we go to the class is about like 20%. They get to join and they become peer counselors for the other students who want to, you know, talking why it's good to resist peer pressure and teaching about that and talking about why they're abstinent and things like that, and also having some fun activities. So I think that's a very positive thing. And if we could implement that widely, I know it'll have a very positive effect. What do you think?
The schools schools right now have a lot to do because of this situation with all the children in the school. And the more support, the better. Of course, the best support's coming from a family, the more, you know, family support.
Right, that's right.
In the schools, there are a lot of grandmothers that are fabulous. Helping to hold families together, and it's hard. It's very hard. The schools are involved more with, you know, the health care, the psychological care, just because so much has been going on, and that it is. I think you know, the more help you can give any child, and the more support they can have, the better. But the schools right now, a lot of them are carrying a heavy load, and some of them have very good support from different systems. Like I know the governor started one where there was a care system. Some of them, we have some legal services. So, and it's something stronger across for all of them. I mean, not all the schools get these benefits. Some do, some don't.
Well, isn't the free lunch program now just for everybody? There's no distinction. And I think we now have breakfast. And I know when we had, when we had really bad storms in the western part of the state a few months ago, the school cooks were coming in and making box lunches that were then being delivered out to the out to the students' homes because they weren't able to come to school to eat. And you have the community pitching in, and it's not that it should. I think it should, but it has to. Otherwise, we're going to things are going to be even worse.
So that's more like those programs. I think they're necessary. We have them like in my local elementary. I volunteered last year for a kindergarten teacher because I met her and she said, I said, what am I going to do? Because I traditionally work with like middle high school. So I just come in and help. So I did. But anyway, point is, they do have the breakfast and lunch. I mean, I'm sure they do for the children, and anyone can get it. I think actually anyone in the school can get it. They have it because there's a certain percentage who are like qualified for it or whatever. That's good. I just think what's more lacking is the, you could call it internal or the causal factor. Like, I don't see a lot of people, like, you hear reporting all the time about whatever crisis is happening, and there are many, whether it be, teen suicide or opioid epidemic or education outcomes are level or going down instead of up, But you don't hear a lot about what I'm talking about, like saying, okay, why is this happening? Oh, okay, well, golly, now, 25 years ago, 50 years ago almost, 5 or 10% of children lived outside of a stable family or whatever. Let's just say a two-parent married family. Now it's 50%. Maybe we should, or definitely we should do something to change that. I don't see that discussion much, or what do you think?
Well, I don't see it. I don't see it either. And it's certainly a logical approach that I don't see downsides to that. But again, it's taking on a situation that you're correct also in saying that has now getting a historical background to it, or a background to it of habit and custom of families that there was not a two-parent family. The children are now giving birth to children. Why should I get married? My father didn't, or my mother didn't. It is a common sense approach. It is approach that I think has many positives to it, but it has a long uphill climb. And in the meantime, we have children being born as we speak, and are out there in our society, growing up and being socialized and being cared for or not cared for, that old adage of it takes a community or a village to raise a child, well, really it's going to have to in many cases, and the government's doing certain things, maybe not, probably not enough. If something's not done, I think the problems of, well, just speaking of West Virginia, are not going to get any better, and I think for your part of the state, the Eastern Panhandle is now an anomaly in West Virginia. You know, there's far more prosperity there, far more growth there, probably far more two-parent families there than many other parts of the state. You know, my experience and my wife's, who was with me, is that the problems in the rest of West Virginia beyond your three counties are significantly greater. I would venture to say that if you clipped off your three counties and did those same statistics, it would probably go up much higher than every other child being born outside of a two-parent family. It would be a wonderful approach to take all over the state, but you know, we're coming from a part of the state that I am certain has far more significant challenges in the area that we're speaking about today than Jefferson County, Berkeley County, and Morgan counties.
Right. Yeah, I would think so. Well, I know definitely these counties have more like prosperity income wise. I think there's no doubt about that, you know, but, and then I'm not sure if the family, the statistics of marital togetherness or whatever, how many two-parent families, but yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think, of course, we do need the practical approach of what we can do in the current sense. But I don't know, I kind of like think is my specialty more like trying to think of it in a broader way. And we've had like good success, good reception, you know, working in like areas, like I said, in the city where most great majority of families, oh, at least probably 75% plus are not two-parent families. And reception has been good. So from the children's and parents' point of view, almost virtually 100% of the parents I've talked to, they love our program. You know, they want that, their kids to hear about that. So that's a positive thing, you know.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a wonderful program. I would like to add to that about the Eastern Panhandle where you are versus the rest of the state. There was recently news media stories about a middle school in Berkeley County and how it had not met standards for the State Department of Education.
Oh, I remember that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and both my wife and I thought that's typical of, yet that school is being singled out, yet that's typical of many, which is a very, very tough age for kids, middle school. That is more typical of middle schools throughout West Virginia than not. And yes, they can say there, those problems were, they're correct in bringing those up, but those are problems that are not just confined to one school in Berkeley County, but through many schools in the rest of the state that are not being singled out. And are they not reporting that data that the Berkeley County school reported or were discovered having those problems? But the middle school problem is not just confined to a single middle school in Berkeley County. It's across the state. And in many cases, I suspect worse than the Berkeley County school. Mm.
You know, I remember reading about that recently. You're right. It is kind of not odd that they're talking about it, but that, you know, that one school. Yeah, you know, like I said, working in schools, you know, I know that those kind of things come up. And it can be chaotic. I've experienced that. And even, you know, teachers are sometimes in a lot of stress. Even the kindergarten teacher I was volunteering for at Blue Ridge Elementary here, she was telling me, you know, even in the kindergarten, there are issues of kids throwing stuff around or whatever, yeah, getting out of hand. In kindergarten, never mind middle school or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, so, again, I think we have to get more at the core, but also, like you're saying, maybe being more honest, like what's the issue? Like to me, it's frustrating that, you know, most news reporting doesn't talk about the core issues, like why is all this stuff going on? What, like, you know, whether it's crime or teen suicide or drug abuse, you know, all those are related to the what we're talking about. We should be talking about and what can be done about it. I think it should be a common discussion. It's not, though. I don't see it.
No, and the kids are raising themselves too a lot because families. You know, both parents.
Talk to him.
both parents are working, and unfortunately, a lot of children are home alone, and then they go to school, and you have a teacher trying to have classroom management and discipline, and these children are used to being their own disciplinarian. They've raised themselves. Moms, you know, they have both people working, and so oftentimes they're home alone for long periods of time, and then they go to school and they don't think they need to listen to the teacher. It's a whole different dynamic than it used to be. As far as in the schools, and any teacher you talk to could tell you that. I think at any level.
Okay.
It's kindergarten through high school.
Well, if I might, can I share my action slide? You can comment on it. I have one other slide. Is that okay?
All right. Okay.
All right, and then maybe we can come to a conclusion. Of course, this will be an ongoing discussion, but I think it's important, like you said, to discuss it. Okay, action steps. So, become a member of Urban Life Training. So, like I said, we have all kinds of materials, like recorded training seminars, and of course, all the materials we use in the classroom, and many videos and lessons, which you can use with your children, or if you want to use them other places. Yeah, so you gain access to all of our character app-centered education materials. So I encourage you to do that. Also, it supports our organization. It's fairly nominal. It's like $49 a year for a subscription. So B, form a chapter of Urban Life Training in your local area. So that means getting with another person or two and, you know, form a chapter, and then you can bring the materials out to your middle school, high school, church, community organization, 4-H, wherever you want to bring it. 2, teach Urban Life Training Program to our leadership club in your local middle or high school, which is basically what we just said. 3, become a member of unionstation.love. So that's our new teaching site. So yeah, so it's supposed to say, you know, find your eternal match there. Yeah, so that's important part of is, I believe, parental responsibility should extend to helping their child find a suitable marriage partner. Our site is designed for that. Singles can join, but also parents can work with their children. Assist your adult child in finding eternal match. I think that's maybe you'll have some comments on that. I think it's not so common, but we did it with our daughter. So it's important, I think, for parents. Receive marriage strength education, elevate your marriage, eternal blessed marriage. You can also take the course we have there as a married couple, which is very valuable. And 4, create a public awareness campaign by getting your local board of education to adopt the resolution for character and aptitude education. Recruit parents and neighbors to support this effort. We did not read that, but we have a resolution for that purpose, which you could bring to local board of education, letting them know that you'd like this kind of education. And then if you have a chapter of Urban Life Training, you can assist them in providing that education. And I think, So yeah, I just wanted to share those points. Did you have a comment about any of them?
Well, I would say, you know, on your action steps, most of those are of an individual initiative that people can choose or reject or modify to their own desires. But I do think the a commonality in all of that is the education of the children, and I think they're a community approval and support of basic concepts needs to be done. And some of those concepts are yes, respect for character, getting an education. I'm married to an educator. I have a son who's an educator. I am stunned by the stories they tell me daily in education compared to my own experience many years ago. But you talk about practical steps. I see it as a practical step, and that is cell phones. I am universally told that cell phones are distract the kids. Yet, and I can see that. I see it myself just in my daily activities. And I ask myself, well, then why don't they simply take the cell phone away? Why does the student have to take the cell phone into the classroom? And it distracts them. It inhibits education. They're there for education. It causes disruptions in the classroom. They're there not to have disruptions in the classroom. To me, that's a simple start that the government and community can begin with. Just have them give up their cell phone when they come into the classroom, put it in a little packet. When they walk through the door, they can retrieve it out. Better yet, not take it to the school at all. You know, parents will say, well, we can't get in touch with our kids. Well, my mom couldn't get in touch with me when I was in school. She'd call the principal's office.
That's right. Like people didn't operate before.
Simple step.
You're right. Like people before 2000 or whatever, 2010, I guess, when cell phones became more popular, smartphones, you know, they didn't like exist for hundreds and thousands of years, whatever. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was interviewing one of the Board of Education candidates locally here in Jefferson County. He had moved here from Berkeley County and was a teacher there. And he said they had that policy at their school and that they didn't enforce it because, well, this is what he told me, whatever, because two parents objected. Now, I don't know if it was one or two or several. I don't know. But, you know, some parents might have bad behavior themselves. But I don't know. It seems like most parents would accept it. Whatever you do, not everybody's going to accept it, period.
Not everybody's going to like it, but to me, that would be a practical first step. So if I'm running for governor someday, Richard, that's what I'll say. We're taking no cell phones in the classrooms.
I support that one. I do.
Four against Rob. That's it.
No, you're right. No, that is a good step. I mean, pretty crazy. It is distracting. I mean, even like, yeah. That was an issue in our clubs and stuff. I told the kids to put away different devices. Some of them we did before there was really popular the smartphone. But even then, even if the kids didn't have a smartphone, they had an iPod or something. You know, I don't know. You know, not during the club. You can't use that. But absolutely, I agree with you.
I don't think they should even be on the school property except by teachers and administrators and they come home, that's theirs. But on the school bus, in the school, on the school grounds, that's it. Like I say, vote for me or against me on that. That's what, you know, we watched a Republican gubernatorial primary a few weeks ago with the most inane political ads ever seen in West Virginia. That would, I think, gotten people's attention. No cell phones in school.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's my campaign.
That would probably be better than a lot of what you heard about. I know what you mean. I got to, like everybody else, I got this stack of mailers like this with all this negative stuff on it. You know, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess we're coming close to the conclusion. Of course, this is an ongoing discussion. I think we should continue it. I mean, whoever is listening, you know, I think the practice, whatever practice you can take from it, I do encourage you to join Urban Life Training, get with, you know, take advantage of the materials, and contact us. You know, what do you think about this approach? We'll have it on our site. You can comment, and by podcast, you can share with your friends, and let's really make this a more common discussion, and let's bring it into practice, I think, these points we're talking about.
I'm not sure I heard you on that last point.
I was saying just let's make it a more common thing to discussing the importance of two-parent married families and to do whatever we can to bring that into, make it a reality.
It would be great. I think it's an admirable endeavor. It's a one-on-one, very individual endeavor, and I think it's worthy of promotion.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Let's continue the discussion. And and if you feel like yourself, whatever, to support Urban Life Training and join and check our materials, you can do that at urbanlifetraining.org, of course. And you can always reach me. Thank you, Mr. Rob and Mrs. Rob, for coming on today. So appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you. You have a good one.
Okay. You too. All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.